Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 11th of Adar. Today's responsible is from the Noda B'Yehuda, from the Madura Tanyana, the second volume, Evan Ezra Sima and Yutet, in the Evan Ezra section, the 19th responsible, dated the 11th of Adar, and the year Tav Kuf Nun Aleph, which was 1791. I just point out that the Noda B'Yehuda refers to it as the year of Zot, Torat Kinaot, which is a phrase from the Torah that refers to what happens when a woman commits adultery, and it's relevant to this tshuva, to this response, because that's what the issue is going to be. And the word kinaot, spelled that above, kuf nun aleph tuf, is the year in question. I read that the pasuk in Naso, in the Sota section of the Torah, is actually Zotorat HaKinaot. So he leaves out the hay, although he could have put in the hay because that would count for 5,000, but Kinaot is the year. So that's, to me, the reason I noticed it is because it's an example of where there's like these simple things rabbis do, not me rabbis, like post-game and Meshivim rabbis, that they do that's a casual example of their expertise and knowledge and grace, I suppose, that he this finds, you know, the year is Tav Kuf Nun Aleph, is the way all of us would say it, and he immediately thinks of that word in this context. I mean, it's not like he walked around the whole year calling it the year of Kinaot, it's because it was relevant to this tshuva. Anyway, side point. Here's the question. He gets a letter from the Rav that he's, who's right to him, and he got the letter for a while back. He says, but I got ill, and I was, you know, in bed for a while, so I couldn't answer you. So it's a reminder that Meshivim were people too, and he was at the end. He was towards the end of his life. He was going to pass away in about 2 years. He was already a man in his late 70s at this point. And the question is, a man goes on a business trip. He goes, you know, to try to find a living, and he goes on a trip. It was more than a year that he was back and forth. So he periodically came home, but it had been gone for a long time, for about a year, and then he came back in Tammuz of Tav Kuf Mem Tet, which would have been 1789, but it's important for us because it's the summer of 1789, but it's important for us in terms of when he's around. When he comes back then, everybody agrees, or he says, he's clear that she was a Nida, his wife was a Nida at the time, meaning they couldn't have relations with each other because she had menstruated and not yet gone to mikvah, and he didn't stay long enough that she was able to go to mikvah, so they hadn't had relations then, and then he left in Tammuz, and he came back the next Shvat, in the middle of the next Shvat. So there's Av Elul Tishrei Cheshvan Kislev Teivet Shvat. So it's 6.5 months that he was away. In other words, even if you could assume that they had had relations in Tammuz, by 6.5 months later, something would have revealed itself. So clearly nothing had happened then. Comes back in the middle of Shvat, and then he was in his house from the middle of Shvat till after Pesach. So he's there Shvat, Adar, and Pesach, and Nisan till Pesach, so about 2 months he was home. And then he left again. And he left again for a while. When he left again for a while, in the next Tammuz, so the previous Tammuz he'd been home, but they hadn't been in love relations because she was a Nida. Then he came back in Shvat for a while, but then the next Tammuz, she already gave birth on the 18th of the month. So let's remember that from Pesach, which is the middle of Nisan, so there's Iyar Sivan Tammuz. It's only 3 months. It's barely 3 months. Or just about 3 months from the middle of Pesach till the middle of Tammuz is 3 months. So if he, right, so he, right, so that's going to be a question. She gave birth, and the baby looks fully formed. Okay, so she gave birth, and it's not just that she gave birth, it didn't seem to be a preemie. As far as anybody can tell, it seemed to be that this is a baby that was a full-term baby, and she nursed the baby herself for 6 days. Now, the nursing herself, I think, is probably supposed to be a part of the idea that it's clearly a full pregnancy, because her nursing the baby suggests that she already had given birth in a natural way where her milk had already come in and stuff like that. So here's the challenge. The challenge is, well, let's finish the evidence. Not only are these things true, there's also witnesses who say, the witnesses to everything that we've just said. They've got good witnesses to all the facts we just said. When he came, when he left, when he was around, all this stuff. That she gave birth, that she nursed it, and then the baby died. But we still don't know. Now, the baby died after 6 days, but we don't know what kind of a death it was or what occurred to it. Now, in Kislev, the man comes back. So she had the baby while he was gone. She nurses the baby while he's gone. The baby dies while he's gone. Now he comes back. And when he comes back, before he went home, people said to him, you can't live with your wife. She had an affair on you because she gave birth to somebody else's baby. Now, here's the halacha. The baby is here only evidence. It's not the fact that she had a baby doesn't make it worse in the sense of what her relationship with her husband could be. The halacha is that we're dealing with, we've dealt with this on other occasions, but we saw Tshuva, I think, together, of Moshe Feinstein's, where he talked about whether a man is allowed to leave his wife about having an affair, and Moshe Feinstein took a position very much the other way from the note he was going to talk about, but there's a lot of more evidence here. That the question is, can they stay together? Because if we had a confirmed fact that she had an affair, so then halakhically they're not allowed to stay together. So the question of confirmed fact, it's always an interesting question of what you have to count as confirmed or not. So Moshe Feinstein had said in the Tshuva that we saw another time that we can work hard to tell the man he shouldn't believe her and he's not allowed to believe her if she's the only evidence we have. But in this case, we have all sorts of evidence. So that's the question. Yeah, can he stay with her? And they told him all the stuff that we've already said, and then they already told him that there was a kala de lo pasik. Now, kala de pasik in halakha means there are rumors, and then there are insistent rumors. So an insistent rumor is a kala de lo pasik. You don't have any evidence of it, but everybody knows it to be true. There's no specific witness, so that is not halachic fact. Right? Without witnesses, without good evidence, you don't create halachic fact. But halachically, a kala de lo pasik does have some effect. So a kala de lo pasik, this consistent rumor that she was pregnant by her affair before he came, the previous Shvat. Right, so meaning that the rumor had already started before that. So he come meaning, if we were going to try to help them stay together, we would try to construct a timeline maybe in which we would say that this baby could have been his. So what would be the timeline which the baby could have been his? It can't be the previous. Well, theoretically, it could have maybe been from the previous tambos because there is some halachos that suggest that you're allowed to assume that a baby stayed for 12 months within the mother. But that's not going to figure so much here because it seemed clear that because it never showed in a time frame that would have been that would have, so when he came in Shvat. So and he, I'm sorry. And in Tammuz, In Tammuz, she was in Nida, so we don't think they had relations because she was in Nida. So theoretically, so we're not going to assume that no, he violated her being in Nida and they had relations with that baby. So that's not going to help. So he came in the middle of Shvat. That would be a good time, but Pesach is too late already. The baby was born, 3 months after Pesach, so that's not going to be good enough. But he came in the middle of Shvat. You could have theoretically, and we'll try to say, maybe they had relations. Maybe in their having relations in Shvat, he impregnated her. And the baby she gave birth to in Tammuz was from there. We're going to get to that. But before he ever came back in Shvat, there was already this strong rumor that she was pregnant from having had an affair. But he didn't hear about it. Nobody told him about it. And you have these situations in life where there's uncomfortable information, where there's a painful information, where there's annoying information, where there's information that you think the person hearing it will not be happy about, and people hesitate a lot before they tell it. So nobody told him. So he came back in Shvat, he spent the whole Shvat and Adar and Pesach with the woman he thinks of as his wife, and his good wife, and they live together, and all the things seem well, but there's already this rumor. The rumor is going to be important for us in terms of thinking about how we categorize her. But other people say, not only that, forget that he heard it, but they also say that in the beginning of Nisan, Kvar Haya Kresa Ben Shineha. So the beginning of Nisan, see, he's still around. So it sounds like he didn't notice it for whatever reason. But the people noticed it, not that's just that we could tell she was pregnant, but that she was showing. That's what Kresa Ben Shineha means. She was showing in her belly the pregnancy. Now, he may have not noticed it. He may have thought she was just getting overweight, but people noticed it. So that's going to be a relevant piece of information for our discussion as well. And he's a firm guy. And he wants to know if he can stay with her or not. That's the question. So the notebook is going to try to find, we're going to talk about it. He's going to, one of the things to notice here, he's going to work really hard to see if there are any ways that he can allow them to stay together for reasons he'll tell us. But it's a reminder that very often in halakha, the point of a respondent is to try to find avenues of kula, avenues of leniency to the extent possible. So first let's talk about the kid. Does the fact that she had a baby in the time when she had the baby, in the middle of the time, does that immediately make her usher to her husband? So, in Evan Ezer, in the fourth chapter of Evan Ezer, Simon, if you doubt it, paragraph 14, the Ramah says that a woman who got pregnant at the end of Sivan, even if she had a miscarriage in Kislev, and you heard the baby crying. So here's the problem. The problem is, We want her to have gotten pregnant at the end of Sivan because that's when her husband was around. If she got pregnant before Sivan, then we're going to have to assume it was from an affair that she had. Then you'll have all sorts of the problems about whether she can stay with her husband or not. And notice that in halacha, for all that the halacha and the gemara is, that we have to separate them, in real life, we try as hard as we can, in general, not to force people to separate for all sorts of reasons. That doesn't mean that they'll stay together of their own volition. It could be the husband will decide he doesn't want to stay with a woman who had an affair, and he'll decide to get divorced. But that's on him. But the halachic requirement they have to separate is one that later halacha tried hard, if it could, to say it didn't have to act upon if it could. So the example here is, in the Ramah you have, woman gets pregnant, so Sivan would be when she got pregnant from her husband, if it was a possibility. She has the pregnancy, she has she miscarries in Kislev. She hears a baby crying, so the problem is, if you hear a baby crying, you think to yourself, that's a baby formed enough that it can cry, and from Kislev to from Sivan to Kislev. So we say it's all right. We can still assume the pregnancy happened at the end of Sivan, because even if it was only 5 months, meaning she had the miscarriage even in the early part of Kislev, even if it was only 5 months, 5 months is long enough that a baby could cry, but it's a nafel, it's a premature baby. It unfortunately wasn't able to survive, and it didn't survive. But in terms of proving that she had an affair, that doesn't prove she had an affair. So the Noda Behuda starts off by saying, and there's a lot we're going to end up skipping here because there's this whole long discussion of it, and it's a reminder of how halacha works, getting through the technicalities. He says, I don't understand how you can say that because, and that would be an avir lidis. He says, I don't understand how you can say that because we have a halachic principle that most babies born are b'nei kaima, are babies that came to full term, and that will survive and into beyond the 30-day period when we say it was a nafel. Most babies are b'nei kaima. So if that's true, then if she has a baby in Kislev, why are we going to assume that it must have been a nafel baby? I mean, we know why. We're going to do it. We're trying to assume because we want the couple to be able to stay together. But what allows us to assume that it was in the miut, and to allow a woman who is maybe a sota, maybe an adulteress, to stay with her husband, even though she says, I know I got pregnant from my husband, so the says, I don't understand why we're going to trust her claims about this, and just because she says something doesn't mean that she really knows it, and that's especially true because there's a machloket, the Ramah in Siman Samachet, brought a machloket about a woman, a Jewish woman, who says, I was coerced into having an affair, right? We know she had an affair. She says, yeah, but he raped me, basically. So the halakha we paskin is that she's believed. We believe that she was raped, and that's the opinion of Rabbi Yona with the Ramban and the Rashba and the Rosh, and that's what we follow. But the Magid Mishnah points out that the Rambam seems to think it's not true, along with others, think that it's not true, that just because she says she was raped is not going to necessarily be good enough. There has to be, I think, other evidence that she was. If you bring evidence she was raped, then that's fine, but just that won't be good enough. Or, I'm sorry, it's good enough in terms of that she didn't lose her ketubah, she'll get her monetary payment, but it's not good enough in terms of saying to us that she can stay with her husband. So that's not quite our issue, so we don't have to talk about it now. So we can leave that for another time. But Rabbi Yehuda is bringing that to point out that he thinks is only the people who say that we can believe it and say she's not nasty. That's even though it goes against the rove. What rove does it go against? The most acts of sexual relations are consensual, right? That's a rove. So why were you going to believe her? Rabbi Yehuda says we're allowed to believe her against a rove of most acts are consensual because that rove is only the Rabbana rove. It's not a well-established Doraita rove. It's a rove. It tells the Ketubos that says that. So there's a rove, and it's probably a sensible rove. But the idea that that majority applies halachically, so that's not such a strong example of it. And therefore, if she says, no, for sure, I was raped, we would believe her. But when it comes to our case, right, there's a baby that was born, and in order for her to stay with her husband, we're going to have to say that this baby must have been a nafel, must have been premature. We have a clear majority, the majority of babies that are born are full-term babies, and are babies that, other than if an illness comes along later, are going to be survived. That's a well-established rove, and we know it's a well-established rove. It's such a strong rove that there's another case where it gives us a leniency. The leniency that rove gives us, that majority gives us, is, let's say a woman was married to a man, and sadly that man passed away without children. So she's supposed to have either yibum with the brother-in-law or a chalitza, right? She's supposed to either marry the brother-in-law or do the chalitza ceremony that allows her to marry other people. But she didn't. And she instead got married. She's already had erusit. She's already partially married, and it's to a kohen. And the reason why it's kohen is important is because if we make her get divorced and then have a chalitza, she won't be able to marry this kohen again. So she's in a marriage now, and if we do what we would ordinarily do, that would make her unable to marry the current husband that she has. Now, what happened was, though, she had had a baby that then passed away in the husband's lifetime. Right? She had a baby that then passed away. Now, if the baby, not in the husband's lifetime. She had a baby in the husband's lifetime, died in the husband's lifetime, that wouldn't help us. After the husband passed away, she had a baby that then died. And so what we don't know is whether that baby that then passed away, it was a baby of Kayama, a Bar Kayama, a baby that was destined to last, other than the fact that it got sick later. And if it was, then she didn't need Yibum and Chalitza at all because she had had a baby. And that baby was the first husband's baby. The fact that if, God forbid, and sadly, children pass away after a fa meeting. Let's suppose a couple get married. And, you know, in those days, let's say they get married at 18. And sadly, the husband passes away at 33. And they've had four kids, right? And then some terrible thing happens and all the kids get killed after the husband's passed away. It's a terrible tragedy, and I made it up, so I hope it never happens, and I'm not talking about it should happen, and Rahman al-Islam, and all the things we say about that. My other point being, that would not affect her Yibum Chalitza status. The moment the husband dies, the moment the husband passes away, if he has children at that moment that are B'nai Kayma, that we have every reason to expect will live, right, they're fully formed people, then there's no more issue of Yibum Chalitza. It all goes away as a possibility, as an issue. So the rove that most babies that are born are B'nai Kayma is so strong that we would let this woman stay married to this Kohen and not need a Yibum or a Chalitza from the brother of her first husband. So the point that Rabbi is saying is, so that's a strong rule. So how can you now invoke the idea that maybe this baby that she gave birth to, how can you, Rama, invoke this idea that maybe the baby she gave birth to in Kislev, which was conceived at best in late Sivan, so you're going to assume it was conceived in late Sivan in order to allow her to stay with her husband when the easier thing to say would be that it's a full-time baby in which case she had had an affair. So that's what the Noda Behuda is struggling with in that Ram, in that Pesach of the Ramah. Not only that, he says actually there's two roves here, right, to say she's prohibited because it's clearly true that if the baby was going to be a full-term baby, meaning a nine-month baby, let's just remember, halachically, in the Gemara's time, the Gemara, and however that works biologically today, is not my issue right now. And the Noda Behuda does not assume that biology has changed at all. You could say maybe biology has changed today, or we don't understand. Whatever it is, I'm not getting into that part of it. But in the Gemara assumed that you could have full-term babies that were born after 7 months, and full-term babies were born after 9 months. That's what the Gemara thought. The Gemara thought the majority of full-term babies stay in the mother for 9 months. We today would say it's a premature baby at 7 months. The Gemara didn't think that. The Gemara actually thought you could have a full-term baby at 7 months. Babies born after 8 months could not survive. And babies born after 9 months will for full-term babies as well. That halachic construct is not something I need to debate right now. I'm just pointing it out because it underlies and underpins the Noda Behuda's tshuva. So the Noda Behuda says, when you say that, you Ramah say that a baby that was born in Kislev might have been conceived at the end of Sivan, and now it was born and it died, but we heard it crying, and we're allowed to think that a five-month baby could cry, he says that's clearly not true of a baby that was slated to go full term to 9 months. It's only true of a baby that was slated to go only 7 months, right? If it's a seven-month baby, then 5/7 along the way, if it, for whatever reason, miscarried, you can imagine that it would have cried, that would be able to cry, and that's what might have happened. But if it's a nine-month baby, that a baby that's only a little bit beyond halfway in its gestation, that it could cry, there's no way the Rama could have meant that. And therefore, he doesn't understand that there, and here too. Now, coming back to our woman wants to say she got pregnant in Shvat when her husband came back, right? That's the earliest. The earliest she could say she got pregnant in order for it not to have been part of an affair would be if she got pregnant in the middle of Shvat. So if she got pregnant in the middle of Shvat and she gave birth in Tammuz, that's about 5 months. So you want to say, then, you would have to say, because we're saying that it's well-formed or whatever, you want to say, well, it was going to be a seven-month baby. And then you'd have to say, right, that it came out after 5 months. So that's two roves that you're going against. There's a rove that he points out, the Gemara Yevamos, Daf Lamed Zayin says, most women give birth after 9 months. So that's two roves now. You're going to claim that it's a seven-month baby. That's going against one rove. And then you're going to say that it's a nafil. It was also a baby that wasn't going to survive because it didn't make it all the way to full term. That's a second rove you're going against. So why would we allow In order to keep them together, we understand why we'd want to do it, but what would make us say that you can go against two majority constructions of reality? So let's remember, in halacha, when we have a rov, what we mean is the rov tells us how we're supposed to assume reality goes in the without any contravening evidence. So just the fact that she wants to try to pretend she didn't have an affair, or she wants to claim she didn't have an affair, and this must be from her husband, and I don't know how it happened. So all that goes against the way we know to construct reality in two different ways, and he doesn't understand how we can do that. So that's where he is. So he's having trouble. So he's going to look for ways to help her out. But those are the problems, right? We have problems because she had a baby, and it's hard to understand how you construct the life of this baby, the conception of this baby, and then the birth and passing of this baby in a way that lets her stay with her husband that doesn't tell us that it must have been from another man. So he tries to say, maybe, meaning his first attempt, which he eventually has a problem with, but it's the first attempt to say that we can argue in her favor, is that when we say that we rely on the rov of Ladot being B'nai Kaima, that we say most babies, like we said for the Yibum case, that most babies are destined, are full term, and therefore are going to survive without any, unless something intervenes to stop them from surviving, and we say it even for Kula purposes, so it's like a real rov, he said that may be only because we don't have a contradictory chazakan against the rov. We don't have a contradictory assumption about reality, right? And Rove is, the majority of cases, this is what's happening. It's not saying about this case in particular, but it's because we can generally assume that the cases we confront are from the majority, because that's the way life works. But in other cases, we also have a particular assumption about this case. So let's say, you know, you knew something about a certain person, and then that confronted a Rove. But I already know about this person, and for that Rove to be true, I would have to assume that the reality that I already knew had changed. So that's where Chazaka comes in, right? So an easy example that pops to my mind is, let's say you've checked a mikvah, and it has it has more than the minimum amount of water in it to be a valid mikvah. So that's called a chazaka. I have a chazaka, and I have an established fact and reality of this mikvah that now I'm working with. So let's say an event happens in the mikvah, whatever it is, and we don't know what it did or didn't do to the water. We didn't get a chance to check it, let's say. And now we have to rule on that issue. So let's say in the majority of cases, that event that happened in the mikvah would have gotten rid of the water in it. But I already have a chazaka on this, because that's the whole story. You have, when you have chazaka, an established fact that may or may not still be true, but a once upon a time established fact about a situation or a person or a condition or an object, so that always has a halachic role to play. And when it goes up against the rove, you have a problem, you have an issue to think about whether you follow the rove or you follow the chazaka. So he says, in the case of the woman back then who was married to the Kohen because she didn't wait long enough and we didn't know if she had a baby or not, and we wanted to know if that baby, we knew she had a baby, we didn't know if that baby was a bar kayama or not, the Note of Yudah says, as soon as she got married, she stopped having the chazaka of being a yevama who needed to go to Lashuk. That broke because she's now married to somebody else. Now the question will be, do we have to interrupt her marriage to this second husband in order to bring her back? So that chazaka went away. That's what he claims. And therefore, that's why the robe was relevant there. And he had a whole discussion of that in another place in Note of Yehuda, where he said that the Isser Yevama Lashuk is never a chazaka, he held, because most women have babies and give birth to the baby. So once a woman was pregnant in the lifetime of her husband, then she, when the husband passes away, sadly, if the husband passes away, she doesn't automatically get a chazaka of being a woman who needs yibum. It's not a chazaka situation. That means, and that makes it much easier for us to assume that the baby was a full-term baby, and therefore that she never needed yibum, because there was never an assumption that she did need yibum. But when there's a presumption, a chazaka on her, that she needs yibum, then you need more evidence to get rid of it. So that's all issues of rov and chazaka, and there was a much longer element of it that I skipped, just because these things can get long and technical, and I don't want to get too much into that. But now our situation, he says, our question is whether she had an affair with another man at all. So we want to say that with the baby, we're going to prove that she did have an affair. We're just going to say the baby might be a full-term baby. So there he says, you could say maybe we have a chazaka against that. The chazaka is that she was married to her husband and allowed to her husband. That's called the cheskat kashrut. A woman has cheskat kashrut when she gets married. We have no reason to think that she has had an affair and she has betrayed her husband. Then we're allowed to assume that she is married to her husband, and she's allowed to stay married to her husband. So in all that situation, that's what's still going on. She says, maybe that's it. So we want the baby to get rid of the chazaka. Maybe there we're not required to follow that rov. And we don't have any good evidence of an action that occurred. If an action had occurred that falls into the rov, and in the most cases of this kind of an action, something would happen, that would get rid of a chazaka. But if you don't have an established action that occurred, we don't know that she had an affair, we don't have an action to do that, then we wouldn't get into the... we wouldn't let that interrupt our her cheskat kashrut, her established presumption that she's allowed to her husband. Problem is, as the Rebbe says, that would have been okay if there was only one rov. Because it's not that the chazaka proves that the rov isn't true, it's that since we don't have a proof either way, we won't decide one way or the other. So that would be true of one rov. But here we have two rovs we need. Remember, we needed the rov that was full term. We need to go against the rov that would be full term. And then we need to go against the rov that would be a 9-month baby. And we need to say it was a 7-month baby and wasn't full term. Because even if it was a 7-month baby that was born, but it was full term, that's not good enough for her either. Right? So since we need to go against two rovs, he says, I think chazaka can get you out of one rov, but not out of two rovs. I don't see how you're going to get out of it. But he's going to keep trying. And here's a line that I think an important line to think about, to keep in mind. With the Yochi Kashin Gerushin, we don't like divorce in halacha. And that's an important point. It's an important point that can go both ways. There are people who get divorced too quickly. And there are people for to whom Jewish society says you shouldn't get divorced, even though it seems to me, as far as I've been able to tell, there are unfortunate situations where certainly they should get divorced. So the idea of Kashin Gerushin is an important point. Here, it's a very important point. But here we're going to find out, for example, he's going to end up thinking that he can't find a way to get her out of it. And yet, even though he knows Kashin Gerushin, it's especially true, he says, because where they're living in Prague, the kingdom has said you can't get divorced without a long and careful investigation. So it's going to be a while before either of them can move on with their lives. And you're going to have the government authority, right? You're going to have, like, basically the police come in and do the investigation to check out the circumstances and know that they have to get divorced and this and this and this. It's going to be a big pain. So you want to try to find a way to help them stay together if you can. So he says, maybe dig through the ground, right? Dig down deep to find a way to find a kula, even though it's not so easy, because before the husband came, right, there was already a strong rumor, a kala de la pasik, that she was pregnant by her affair. So he says, how are we gonna decide that the ubar, that the fetus, that the baby was his, when you have this strong rumor, well-established rumor, right? So if there's a rumor she's pregnant before the husband comes back, and then the husband comes back and there's some odd way to think that maybe the baby is his, how are you going to do that? You have this strong rumor that she was pregnant already. So it's true that we don't stop husbands and wives from being staying together just because of rumors like that. That's not halakhically valid evidence to require a husband to separate from his wife. But it does get in the way of our ability to assume that maybe it's the husband. I mean, even in the case in the Ramah, the Nura Buta points out, where the Ramah said, well, the baby might cry, and therefore you can assume it. In that same paragraph, the Ramah had spoken about the fact we can also sometimes assume that a baby stayed inside a woman today. I don't know today that we would do this, but this is what was true in the time of the Rosh Hashanah Aruch, that we can sometimes assume that a baby stayed in as much as 12 months inside the mother, and that would help us construct it, that it was the father, the husband's baby. But the Ramah himself there says, but if they saw a davar mechuar, but if they saw activity of hers that gave strong reason to believe that she was having an affair, that she was acting inappropriately with other men in a way that could get her pregnant, so then we don't say it. Meaning this whole idea that we construct as much as we can, we find a way as much as we can to say that they can stay together, and we'll make all these constructs of how her pregnancy could or couldn't have worked, so we don't do that if there's other evidence. And that also, davar mechuar is also not sufficient evidence to make them split up. So that's the idea. If there's evidence, even though it's not halakhically valid enough evidence to say she must be having an affair, but if there is that kind of evidence, it does get in the way of our saying we'll construct the situation to assume that the baby is the husband's. And he says, in there too, there's this fake if you wanted to. You could say maybe it's her husband's because of the 12-month thing, and maybe even if you tell me that she got pregnant by somebody else, that maybe he raped her. Maybe it was coerced on her. So apparently the kior, the activity that we see, which is not that we saw them having an affair, it's that we saw things. You know, we saw them flirting in some kind of, there's a whole definition of kior. We saw them engage in some kind of physical activity, but not the kind that necessarily that directly proves to us they had an affair. Even that's just enough for us to say that reconstruct this pregnancy in these kinds of somewhat unconvincing ways to try to let them stay together. And the Notabita says, in Kala Dilopasik, a rumor like that is no worse than having seen them do some kind of physical action with each other without any cause. That's all the same thing. More than that, he says, we have witnesses who say that she was showing in Nisan. The phrase Kresa Ben Shinab actually means, I think, her stomach was between her teeth. She wasn't showing that much clearly because that the husband would have noticed. But that she was showing. So if she was showing in Nisan, says the Notabihuda, it can't be that she got pregnant in the middle of Shvat when the husband came back, because that's not enough time, right? There's Shvat, Adar, and Nisan. It's 2 months, and we have a strong halachic tradition that you don't show before 3 months. So then he says, you know, happens to be, if you want to argue that it was a 7-month baby, remember he had said that there were 7-month babies and 9-month babies, maybe this was a 7-month baby. So if it was a 7-month baby, that would help when the baby was born, why it looked so much like a full-term baby, because it was well-formed because it was a 7-month baby. So here too, you could say that. He says, even then, and even if you assume there's a Rashi and Nida, which seems to imply that a 7-month baby, that if a woman's having a 7-month pregnancy, she'll show early as well. She'll show at a third of 7 months. So he goes through the whole of the calculus and says that even then, you're missing 6 days when the husband for when she started showing. If she started showing in Nisan, you're missing 6 days. That part of it, I have to say, is not as convincing, because you'd have to argue that when we say a third, she only shows at a third of her full term, whatever that full term is. To say that even 6 days would matter, you could have had an argument there, maybe. The more convincing point, I think, though, is that he says, or there's a note here that points out, the Mabushi Yom Tov points out, that he seems to have taken that assumption. But there's another Rashi in Yevamo, which is more, I think, the sugya in question, which points out that if a woman gets married after her first husband dies, without a Yibam question, her first husband dies, she gets married too soon. She's supposed to wait 3 months so that we can know whose the baby is. Meaning, you don't want to have, because for our various halakhic purposes, you have to know if the baby's from the first husband or the second husband. So if we're trying to figure that out, we want her not to get married for 3 months after her husband passes away, so that we can be sure she's not pregnant. So you wait, so the Gemara says, I don't understand. Let her only wait 3 weeks, and then get married. And then after 3 months from the death of the first husband, you'll check her. So Rashi says, because it's not enough time for a pregnancy for the second husband to have shown. So that Rashi seems to assume that it's always a matter of 3 months. In any case, the point is, however you figure it out, that nobody's saying is she's showing way too early for it to have been the middle of Shvat. So in the ends up saying, he thinks the evidence of the witnesses that she was showing already in Nisan mean that we have no way to construct this to say that she's pregnant by the husband. She clearly can't be pregnant by the husband. The only possibility he throws out at the end is, if you talk to her, right, and I haven't heard what the woman says about the whole thing, and I'm not going to give you a final psak, and I'm basing what I'm saying now on the idea that she's denying she had an affair. But if, and you'd obviously not be allowed to let her know this, because then that would ruin the whole thing, but if she were to say, yes, I had relations with another man, but he raped me, so then you'd have to figure out if we can believe her or not, right? Theoretically, that's a valid claim that she can say with her husband, but she hasn't said it yet. She didn't say it right away, and there's the rumors and this. He says, you have to tell me exactly what she said, and you'd have to tell me what her conduct was, if she's known to be otherwise a woman of good conduct and of modesty and chasteness, such that we don't have to think that she's the kind of a woman who would be likely to have an affair and all those kinds of things. Then I'll know whether we can find a way to let her stay with her husband. But until then, she has to separate from her husband, and as far as we know, they can't stay married to each other, especially since not only was the baby born, but all the evidence seems to say that it was full term in the way that he looked and shaped. So this is a tshuva of the Rebbe on issues of helping a woman who seems to have had an affair and had a baby from the affair. It seemed to be based on when her husband was there and not there. These are some of the ways we need to try to help her get out of it and be able to stay with her husband, although he failed so far, he still left room open for the possibility that he could find a way. That is a responsible day for the 11th of Adar. Have a great day.